Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Minutes past eight, and a good evening to you. Friday night, talking Leeds. What could be better if you're a Leeds fan? If you're not a Leeds fan, I mean, nothing could be worse. But 60 minutes of Leeds is what you're getting, my friend. Like it or not, the Mighty Whites is on the agenda, and you and I are going to talk about it. Matt Beadle is normally here. He's not tonight, and it's Andy Hodgson in the chair. You'll normally find me on a Sunday afternoon between 12 and 4. And so the next hour, if you're a Leeds fan, get out that rose and give it a kiss, my friend, because you can get involved in this show across the UK, wherever you are. A Leeds fan in exile, you can be a Leeds fan tonight on the air. 0208 70 20 558 is our number. What are your current big issues? Are you breathing a sigh of relief following the recent results? Because it looked a bit dicey at one point, and now it looks a little bit beautiful, and now it's looking like the promised land is just around the corner. Oh, kiss your lucky egg, and away we go. 0208 70 20 558. Call us now if you think it is game on for promotion, and there is no way Leeds will slip up this time round. I've got so many friends that are Leeds fans, having gone to school in Harrogate, that they spend all their time going, oh, God, oh, my God, oh, God, oh, my God. And currently, the mood in the Leeds fan camp with my mates is, oh, we're going up again. Shut your face. Watch it, your team. We are coming for you. In the studio with us from All Stats, aren't we, is John McKenzie. And, John, you always like to start with a stat. Let's do one.
Okay, so it's a clean sheet stat this week. So Leeds have a chance for their fifth consecutive clean sheet in a row tomorrow. This is the second run of four in a row that we've had. The last was broken by the 3-3 draw against Cardiff. No one else in the top six has had more than three clean sheets in a row this season.
Why? Why are they getting so many clean sheets? What's the key now?
Well, yeah, that's a big question, because the issues this season have been scoring. And the reason why we've been dropping points has been that we haven't been able to keep those clean sheets and give the team something to work with in terms of winning points. So, yeah, it's made a big difference. I'm not entirely sure why. We've been racking our brains about this across the last few podcasts that we've done. But it's making a big difference for us, because you'll know we had that run of 3-1-0 wins, which got us 9 points out of nine, which was really important for us before the whole result. And without those, I don't think we'd be in quite so positive a position as we are now.
Yeah, and it is a positive position, isn't it? Because I remember only a month ago having Leeds fans on air here basically going, we've bottled it again. This has happened so many times, it's ridiculous. You know, we're starting to even question Bielsa. He's got to go at the end of the season because, you know, he can't deliver what the project was. But it's all changed all of a sudden. What is the last month or so, what has been the difference?
I think we've been very lucky in other teams who are challenging us taking points off each other. I think results have gone our way in a lot of weekends. And even though we did give away a 12-point lead at one point over the third place, and got it down to, I think we were level on points with Fulham at one point, with only goal difference differentiating between us. Despite that, we still managed to have results generally favouring us, and we never actually dropped into the chasing pack. And I think that's been the difference. I know that's not a particularly positive skew to put on it, but we've been saying all the way through this season, Leeds are doing everything they need to do to win games. We just haven't been getting over the line. We've had a long period in which we had individual errors that were just catastrophic for us. One of the things we talk about a lot on our channel is game state. So if you go into a game with a game plan and you give away a silly goal and you're 1-0 down, it completely changes the tenor of the game, and you have to change your tactics, and teams can sit deep against you and make it hard for you to score. And that was happening just over and over and over again. Fortunately, we managed to iron out those errors, and the chances that were created rating are still good enough for us to win. And so it's just eventually the process has sort of played itself out.
So are you saying then there's quite a large portion of luck in this, or are you saying that Bielsa actually has changed something to iron out those problems?
I don't think he's changed anything, to be honest. And I think the reason why he hasn't changed anything is because he knows if you look at the underlying figures, everything is there. And at the end of the day, you have to create more and better chances than your opponent. And Leeds have been doing that week in, week out in the Championship. If you look at underlying tables, if you look at XG tables, which work out what results could have been based on the chances, the quality of those chances, Leeds are far and away the best team in the league. And they probably should have tied up promotion by now. I think everyone kind of knows that, but they have this funny propensity to just, as we've said, to not bottle it, but certain players have just had howlers and then suddenly you're on the back foot and I suppose that there's at the back of their minds there's last season, there's obviously the pressure of the club wanting to get back to the top flight for the first time in 15 seasons, so it's all of that kind of thing I think playing into the back of it. But now it's looking very good indeed. A lot of models that there's a lot of mathematicians who put out models of probability, and most of them have Leeds above 95% chance of promotion now, so it's really looking like they are in the driving seat.
I do wonder, you know, with this is an hour of purely about Leeds, but anyone who's not a Leeds fan looking in from the outside, the reason that they do bottle it every season as they get nearer and nearer is because of the pressure, because it is unquestionably a massive support, a massive vocal support in a way that many clubs simply aren't. And I wonder if that's what comes to play, is that the players end up going, I mean, hang on, I'm trying my hardest, and then I'm trying too hard and it all goes wrong again.
I think that's true generally, but I think, you know, every fan base wants their team to go up. Mm. So I don't know whether or not I would read too much into that. What I would say is that Leeds have been very lazy as a club in their attempts to get up back into the top. They've had everything in their favour to be able to just actually sit down, be rational and say, right, how do we get back into the top division? And I think the reason why the pressure mounts up for Leeds is that it always feels like a short-termist solution to everything. So even this season, like when everything was bad, there were so many fans who were worried about us not going up this season, precisely because if Leeds don't go up this season, what happens? Bielsa goes, you lose Calvin Phillips, you suddenly everything looks a lot less rosy. Mm. You don't have a project, you don't have a system, and you're back at square one. And I think that's the issue. The issue is that there hasn't been a coherent project ever since Leeds have gone down to be like, right, okay, we've gone down, we need to start from scratch, we need to think about what we're going to try and do to get here. We need to have someone like a director of football who's going to have a coherent plan, and then the managers were going to be brought in to fit in with that coherent plan. It's just not happened. And what Radric Arni, the owner, has done has been gambling on paying Marcelo Bielsa more money than any other manager is being paid in the Championship to try and buck the trend for a couple of seasons to see if they can do it that way. But if it happens, we've been very lucky in one respect. But I think that also added to the pressure, because everyone knows if it doesn't work this season, then it's going to be back to much of the same.
What's the shortest possible time, you think, for a... I mean, everyone calls it a project now in football, don't they? But you know, you can't bring in a Bielsa and say, all right, in one season, get us up. That's just not realistic, because the culture reflected by a guy like Bielsa doesn't come in 5 minutes. It doesn't matter who you are. It takes a period of time where people go, I'm with that guy because he brought me in. And that's really important. Is that 2 years? Is that 3 years?
I don't know. I think it varies depending on the manager. I mean, if you look at Bielsa's time at Leeds, they could have been promoted last season. Yeah. It wasn't beyond the realms of possibility. So, and you know, he turned up at the beginning of the summer and they came out. I still remember to this day, I went to a pre-season friendly against Las Palmas, which was the first time he really played the team as he was going to play them for that season. Mm. And it was just incredible what he'd managed to achieve with them even over the summer. So I think Bielsa's a bit of an outlier in that regard. And I think there's a really weird phenomenon with Bielsa, which is that his system requires absolute fanaticism on the part of the people involved with it,
yeah,
which works and doesn't work depending on where you're at. And also can see, I think at the end of the little wobble that Leeds have just had, I think the players were getting a bit frustrated with him. if once you lose that belief, then I think everything falls down. And I think one of the reasons why Bielsa's worked at Leeds is because there's a group of players there who recognise that he is a class above what you would usually expect at that level, and so they've been happy to just do what he's told them. And I suspect that might be why Bielsa hasn't been more successful in his career, because it does require a huge amount of trust in the process. But yeah, I think, you know, it's tough. Like, building 2 years, 3 years, yeah, that's what you need to aim at. You need to have a longer term project, but you need to say, we're going to give our manager, we're going to bring him in, they're going to fit our ideals, they're going to fit our project, and we're going to give them 3 years to achieve that. And that's what you just have to do.
It must have been delightful, though, as a Leeds fan, just looking back now at the last 10 years and that period that you had where there was a new Leeds manager every 4.5 minutes. And it was a joke, wasn't it? It had got to the point at Leeds where, as a manager, you get that phone call and you go, you're having a laugh, mate. You're all right, I'll leave it, thanks very much. It just got silly. It's stability, proving that the stability works, isn't it now?
Yeah, and Bielsa, I think, is the first manager that we had over a summer period. So for the last season, in between the two seasons, that we'd had for something like 7 seasons or something like that. And it's just incredible how, again, we've talked about short-termism, and that's the problem. The problem was, we're going to bring in a manager without a real plan, and we're going to give them 6 months to see if they've got anything. And it just isn't going to happen. And fair play to the ownership structures for deciding that Bielsa was going to be some kind of solution. But, you know, if it hadn't worked out, it didn't work out, we would have been back where we were. And I think Radrizzani would have moved on. He didn't want to put any more money into it. And it's just the way that football is going, I'm afraid that it is a business, and you can try and game the system for so long. But in the long run, look at the teams who are doing well. They're the teams who've taken their time to develop projects. Teams like Liverpool, who started from scratch with FSG, and yeah, they've made mistakes and stuff, but they've now got to a point where they've got an analytics and recruitment department that are just incredible, and it's very hard to see anyone really catching them up from there without being Man City and just flinging money at it. And you know that everyone else is just playing catch up to them, and with Klopp, you know, you've had the same thing, a clear belief, clear system, a clear idea of what sorts of players you want to bring in as well. I think that's really important. And when you do that, suddenly football starts looking a lot easier than it does when you're a mid-table team and you can't do anything for years and years and years.
Yeah, you know, when the documentary came out about Leeds, did that surprise you, that documentary? How it was almost like watching the Man City one. You know, it looked proper grown-up, really pro, and you kind of go, wow, this is impressive stuff here. You know what I mean? I can buy into that myself. I'm not even a Leeds fan. Do you know what I mean?
I'm going to make a confession. I've not seen that.
You've not seen it?
I couldn't bring myself to watch it.
It's good.
I hear this from people. Then other people say that they didn't think that I would like it as well. So maybe one day. I'm one of these people who likes to watch things like after everyone else has forgotten about them.
Yeah.
Just because it, I don't know, it just makes me feel like I'm making my own mind up about it a bit more. But I don't know. I think a lot of it can be construed as PR. You know, I think Radrizzani he's made his money in television. So I think a lot of the documentary series was about presenting this as a sort of much more coherent project than perhaps it was. So I don't know. I still reserve judgment on that.
Well, it's beautifully polished. So when you get there, trust me, there are people who are not Leeds fans going, phew, I might go and watch a match now. Now, coming up in a couple of minutes, an interview you've done with Phil Hay from The Athletic for Football Today. What are we going to hear in that?
Yeah, so I talked to Phil about the impact that the next 3 months are going to have on both Leeds United but also Marcelo Bielsa's career as well. So we talked a little bit about the slump that's just happened. We talked a little bit about the idea of the Bielsa burnout that often gets bandied around when people talk about Marcelo Bielsa. Why is it that this slump happened midway through the season? Isn't it supposed to happen at the end of the season? Whether or not he thinks that that's going to happen yet, whether there is going to be some kind of burnout at the end of the season. But we also talked about the legacy, the role that Leeds can play in Marcelo Bielsa's legacy. By the end of the season, he will have managed more games for Leeds United than any other club except for Athletic. And he'll only be 13 games off that as well. So this is like Leeds are well on the way to becoming his the club that he's been at the longest, which is quite an incredible stat, really. And so I find that whole facet of him as well. Why is he settled at Leeds, at a club that you might not expect someone like that or someone with that legacy to go to?
Well, we'll hear more from that from John McKenzie in a couple of minutes' time. You're listening to the Leeds Fan Show on Love Sport, the station giving fans a voice. And we've got your team covered now with Churchill Business Insurance. Take the stress out of managing your van insurance with Churchill, and their comprehensive policies offer you peace of mind, 24-hour accident recovery, £500 cover for loss or damaged audio equipment, plus, wait for this, guaranteed repairs for 5 years. No, it's true. Visit the fan page at churchill.com. Churchill is underwritten by UK Insurance Limited, and Churchill Van is arranged and administered by Brightside Insurance Services Limited. Find out about the slump, the 3 months, the Bielsa burnout, and more as the Leeds Fan Show continues straight after this.
Love Sport.
19 minutes past 8, Andy Hodgson in for Matt Beadle on the fan shows tonight. Cardiff fan show at 9, 9.30 is a Brighton fan show. At 10 o'clock tonight, it's the Sheffield Wednesday fan show, and Huddersfield at 10.30. That is your lineup tonight. But it's the Leeds fan show, the Mighty Whites, Leeds, all the way through until 9 o'clock. John McKenzie's here from All Stats, aren't we? And we're just about to hear an interview with Phil Hay from The Athletic. John, what's going to be in it?
Yeah, it's just looking at the impact that the next 3 months is going to have on Leeds United, but not simply Leeds United, on Marcelo Bielsa's career as well. So we talked about all of those things in that interview for Football Today.
All right, and we'll build up to Huddersfield after that. Let's hear from Phil Hay from The Athletic.
From where we're sitting, there's 10 games left in the Championship this season. I don't think we need to talk about how, you've already mentioned it, how impactful it's going to be on Leeds United's history. But I'm interested in your thoughts on how important this next 2 months is on Marcelo Bielsa's legacy. How do you think that he will be remembered on the basis of the next 2 months?
It's been so long outside of the Premier League, and there have been so many managers who've had a go, and ultimately I don't think there'd be a more romantic story than somebody like Bielsa doing it. And you almost feel that if somebody is going to do it, and if this is the point at which the kind of ceiling finally breaks, it'll be better for the fact that it's him, that it's somebody as kind of iconic and as influential in a coaching sense as Bielsa, rather than, to be quite honest, the feeling that they've spent their way out of it, or they've just, you know, amassed a really expensive squad who couldn't fail and would have got up under any coach. You genuinely feel that this would be Bielsa's triumph and his achievement, because it has in a huge, you know, no small part at all been down to him.
You're in the unique position of dealing with him on a regular basis. Obviously, there's a lot of narratives that are spun about Marcelo Bielsa as an individual. I wondered how your experiences of having to cover him on a regular basis have squared up to those narratives that you hear from people who aren't perhaps following Leeds United as closely as you are.
The crazy element of him I've never seen, really. I think the El Loco nickname was, more than anything, down to the way he played football, the way he got his teams to play, the kind of, not reckless, but the sort of strange formations, the 3-3-1-3, the systems that people hadn't seen before, and the kind of total commitment to possession and attacking. There are elements of him, if you look back, that look crazy in a personality sense, and he's had flashpoints and he's had run-ins with clubs and everything else, but actually he would seem to me, in his own kind of unique and sometimes strange way, to be the most considered coach I've dealt with, and also the coach with the most clarity about what he wants to do and how he sees his team setting up and games to be played. He is a coach that doesn't suffer stupid questions. He is a coach that will give you some fascinating insight into things that you never really expected to speak about. And also, I like the fact that he is a coach who will speak about tactics, who actually likes to get into the analysis of the tactical side of football. You see a lot of managers who talk about not liking the sort of tittle-tattle questions that come with football, particularly in the Premier League. But actually, when you try to nail them down to why did you play this player or why did you use this system, the number of managers who say systems are irrelevant, well, they're not irrelevant to Bielsa at all. You know, systems are fundamental to what he does, and he will talk at great length about why he does things to try and help you and, you know, by extension, the supporters, understand the point of his approach and his system. And I've really enjoyed that about him. And he can be difficult, and he can be tetchy, and there are points at which you feel like he's going to jump across the table and punch you. But again, I like that, and I like the kind of spirit in him, and you know that it matters to him, you know that it's important, and above all else, he's able to do it without certainly in public, letting his ego get in the way. He doesn't make it about him. He doesn't try to make it about him. I find it hard to believe that he is able to, in his head, is able to separate his own involvement from the actual results. I mean, I've said before that at the end of the season, I can imagine him crediting the players and trying to take very little credit himself, when in actual fact, a huge amount of it will be due to him. And he must understand the difference he makes and the influence he has. But it's all about the football for him. I think the things he enjoys most are sticking to one approach and the challenge of making it work, but also seeing the development of players, in young players in particular. But I think the progress of Clegg and the progress of Cooper, guys like that, it'll give him immense satisfaction, because that ultimately is what coaching is about. You know, it is pure coaching. And I can safely say that we'll never deal with anybody like him again at Leeds.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned the El Loco nickname, because it's a nickname that he, throughout his career, has always been a little bit tetchy about. I've heard a lot of press match interviews with him where he's refused to even say the nickname. He'll say, you know, you have this nickname for me, and he'll sort of talk about it in a roundabout way. I wondered, from what you know about him, why he might be so keen to distance himself from being talked about in the semantics of madness in particular, because that seems to be the thing that he is pushing back against. He doesn't like people considering his ideas to be crazy, because I think he believes in them and thinks they're good ideas.
Yeah, he doesn't think that they're crazy, and I think he wants people to realise that, from his point of view, it is all done with rational thought. I mean, it's not unfair to say that it is all obsessional as well, and he goes to the nth degree in the way that a lot of managers don't. But again, I think he resents the idea that in some way he's trying to attract attention by what he does. I think he resents the idea that his craziness, or the craziness that people perceive in him, is attention-seeking, or is done for the benefit of the cameras, or done for the benefit of the media, or more to the point, is done for the benefit of his profile and creating this caricature of somebody who is a bit off the wall and is a bit mental, to be frank. And it really isn't the case with him. I think more often than not, when he's come to blows with certain clubs, and I'd exclude Leo from this, because that seemed to go wrong very quickly, and I think there were clearly issues there. But when it's gone wrong with clubs, it's because of standards or expectations. You know, at Lazio, they weren't delivering on transfers, so he left after 2 days. At Marseille, they couldn't agree on the terms of a contract, so again, he went. And at Bilbao, there'd been arguments about the training ground, there'd been issues there. I think it's fair to say that was coming to the end of its lifespan anyway. I mean, it did feel as if it had all gone a little bit sour. But, you know, somebody I know who knows him well had said to me, these situations don't develop because Bielsa is unduly difficult. I mean, he is difficult and he is demanding, but it's not because he's being unreasonable. It's happening because the clubs know what he expects, they know what he's going to demand, they know what he's like, and ultimately, if they don't operate in a way that he's happy with, he will up sticks and leave.
How much of this do you think comes down to personality? Because he's someone who you cannot experience for any amount of time without realising that he's not neurotypical. He clearly engages in the world in a way that's different to other people. How do you think that that's impacted the way that he's gone through management, how he's dealt with people as well?
I always imagine that it must be a challenge for him, being as kind of socially awkward as he is, in a sport where people expect footballers and managers to be very outgoing, to be very charismatic, and to give them lines, to give them stories to write about. He does that, but he does it in an almost unintentional way. So when you're getting stories from him about why he and Hernan Crespo fell out, he's not trying to fill your pages for you, and he's not trying to write headlines. He's just saying what is in his head, and he's trying to articulate other things. I mean, but the example with Crespo was that he felt with Crespo that he, at one point in his career, he'd had to lie to him about how good he was in order to get a better performance out of him. And so the kind of train of thought went that if you say things to players that aren't true, ultimately it's going to catch up with you, and you're going to get found out, because somewhere down the line they'll see that you contradict yourself, and ultimately their respect for you drops. His way of management is totally unique, and his style of dealing with the press is totally unique. And you're never going to get from Bielsa any show for the camera, any display of emotion that's made for the camera. And actually, you know, I always think back to Newell's Old Boys, where they won the first title, and there are the famous pictures of him on somebody's shoulders swinging the shirt around his head and the helicopter in the background. And it was different when he won the title at Villa Sarsfield, and it will, I'm sure, be different if Leeds get promoted. I don't see him making a great play to the crowd. I think it will be on the insistence of others if he does actually come out and acknowledge the crowd in any big way. And I think think he will try to fade into the background and to make as little of it as possible, in effect to try and leave it to others, because he doesn't seem to enjoy being the centre of attention. And I think in the main it's always been that way for him, and it's probably more and more the case as he gets older.
Which possibility do you think is more fitting for Bielsa's career? Is it the final triumph of promotion that sort of caps off a career that's been constantly seen through the lens of failure? Or is it the failure of another missed success that's dogged him throughout his footballing life?
If there's any romance in the game, you would have to think that it would be the former. And it would be that this coach who Leeds have thrown millions of pounds at and have kind of sought out in the wilds of Argentina, you know, what looked like a totally, totally unrealistic appointment when they first started talking about it, but ultimately came to pass. Him winning promotion here, I think, would be a very fitting end. And I've often wondered whether or not there's another job for him in football anywhere. Only he can say, and it might well be that he's someone who can't leave the game alone. But, you know, he is into his mid-60s now, and I wonder what else would be out there for him if he wasn't at Leeds. I don't see him ever taking charge of another English club. And, you know, there's constant interest in him from Spain and elsewhere. But it would surely have to be something that really appealed to him and something that kind of had the same sort of passion for him as Newell's or as Leeds United. You're right. I mean, if it was to end in failure, it would extend the kind of narrative as there has been around him all the way through, and he knows that himself. But as I say, if football is romantic and if there is any romance left in it, then it would be a bit of a travesty if he wasn't able to go out of here saying that he was the one after 15 years who finally broke this jinx.
Half past eight, it's the Leeds fan show. Phil Hay from The Athletic there talking to John McKenzie, who's here now. And the music at the end of that, John, makes me feel like I want to do some sort of hot yoga. Was that the idea? Or
that's, well, the Football Today podcasts, they are quite highly produced and they have music in there as well. So a lot of people were saying that they felt a lot more relaxed about promotion off the back of listening to that podcast.
I can't be bothered to do the rest of the night, to be honest with you. Get Matt back in here. I'm not bothered now by the rest of this. Now, listen, there's a big game coming up tomorrow. Great local rivalry as well. It's Huddersfield, where, frankly, it always rains. My dad lives there and he says it doesn't, but he's a liar. The beauty of going there is you can see the Emily Moore transmitter, which I imagine as a Leeds fan you're looking forward to. It is, according to my dad, the biggest freestanding monument in Europe. I don't know whether that's true or not.
Is that true?
I don't know whether that's true. My dad says a lot of things.
That's a great word to throw in because it just makes it sound a lot more like plausible, doesn't it?
It doesn't.
If you say something like that, people are going to be like, well, they must have done some sort of research. That must be true.
Exactly. Yeah. My dad says stuff with confidence and people tend to believe him. He also says,
I'm going to fact check your dad.
Will you fact check that? I can tell him if he's wrong. He also says, all Mercedes Benz are diesel. Now, that isn't true. That's nonsense. When he said that, I went, oh, right. What? Don't talk rubbish, Dad. And he's an Everton fan, so, you know, don't believe a word he says. Anyway, Huddersfield, the opposition, 3 o'clock tomorrow. We will get into that with Huddersfield Town journalist for the Examiner Live, Stephen Chicken, and I'll be asking him the first question in a couple of minutes' time. Is that your real name or is it a stage name?
Love Sport.
19 minutes past eight. Andy Hodgson in for Matt Beadle on the fan shows tonight. Cardiff fan show at 9:30. It's a Brighton fan show at 10 o'clock tonight. It's the Sheffield Wednesday fan show and Huddersfield at 10:30. That is your lineup tonight. But it's the Leeds fan show, the Mighty Whites. Leeds, 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 all the way through until 9 o'clock. John McKenzie's here from All Stats, aren't we? And we're just about to hear an interview with Phil Hay from The Athletic. John, what's going to be in it?
Yeah, it's just looking at the impact that the next 3 months is going to have on Leeds United, but not simply Leeds United, on Marcelo Bielsa's career as well. So we talked about all of those things in that interview for Football Today.
All right, and we'll build up to Huddersfield after that. Let's hear from Phil Hay from The Athletic.
From where we're sitting, there's 10 games left in the Championship this season. I don't think we need to talk about how, you've already mentioned it, how impactful it's going to be on Leeds United's history. But I'm interested in your thoughts on how important this next 2 months is on Marcelo Bielsa's legacy. How do you think that he will be remembered on the basis of the next 2 months?
It's been so long outside of the Premier League and there have been so many managers who've had a go, and ultimately I don't think there'd be a more romantic story than somebody like Bielsa doing it. And you almost feel that if somebody is going to do it and if this is the point at which the kind of ceiling finally breaks, it'll be better for the fact that it's him, that it's somebody as kind of iconic and as influential in a coaching sense as Bielsa, rather than to be quite honest, the feeling that they've spent their way out of it, or they've just, you know, amassed a really expensive squad who couldn't fail and would have got up under any coach. You genuinely feel that this would be Bielsa's triumph and his achievement, because it has in a huge, you know, no small part at all been down to him.
You're in the unique position of dealing with him on a regular basis. Obviously, there's a lot of narratives that are spun about Marcelo Bielsa as an individual. I wondered how your experiences of having to cover him on a regular basis have squared up to those narratives that you hear from people who aren't perhaps following Leeds United as closely as you are.
The crazy element of him I've never seen, really. I think the El Loco nickname was more than anything down to the way he played football, the way he got his teams to play, the kind of, not reckless, but the sort of strange formations, the 3-3-1-3, the systems that people hadn't seen before, and the kind of total commitment to possession and attacking. There are elements of him, if you look back, that look crazy in a personality sense, and he's had flashpoints and he's had run-ins with clubs and everything else, but actually he would seem to me, in his own kind of unique and sometimes strange way, to be the most considered coach I've dealt with, and also the coach with the most clarity about what he wants to do and how he sees his team setting up and games to be played. He is a coach that doesn't suffer stupid questions. He is a coach that will give you some fascinating insight into things that you never really expected to speak about. And also, I like the fact that he is a coach who will speak about tactics, who actually likes to get into the analysis of the tactical side of football. You see a lot of managers who talk about not liking the sort of tittle-tattle questions that come with football, particularly in the Premier League. But actually, when you try to nail them down to why did you play this player or why did you use this system, the number of managers who say systems are irrelevant, well, they're not irrelevant to Bielsa at all. You know, systems are fundamental to what he does, and he will talk at great length about why he does things to try and help you and, you know, by extension, the supporters, understand the point of his approach and his system. And I've really enjoyed that about him. And he can be difficult and he can be tetchy, and there are points at which you feel like he's going to jump across the table and punch you. But again, I like that, and I like the kind of spirit in him, and you know that it matters to him, you know that it's important, and above all else, he's able to do it without, certainly in public, letting his ego get in the way. He doesn't make it about him, he doesn't try to make it about him. I find it hard to believe that he is able to, in his head, is able to separate his own involvement from the actual results. I mean, I've said before that at the end of the season, I can imagine him crediting the players and trying to take very little credit himself, when in actual fact, a huge amount of it will be due to him. And he must understand the difference he makes and the influence he has. But it's all about the football for him. I think the things he enjoys most are sticking to one approach and the challenge of making it work, but also seeing the development of players, in young players in particular. But I think the progress of Cleek and the progress of Cooper, guys like that, it'll give him immense satisfaction, because that ultimately is what coaching is about. You know, it is pure coaching, and I can safely say that we'll never deal with anybody like him again at Leeds.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned the El Loco nickname, because it's a nickname that he, throughout his career, has always been a little bit tetchy about. I've heard a lot of press match interviews with him where he's refused to even say the nickname. He'll say, you know, you have this nickname for me, and he'll sort of talk about it in a roundabout way. I wondered, from what you know about him, why he might be so keen to distance himself from being talked about in the semantics of madness in particular, because that seems to be the thing that he is pushing back against. He doesn't like people considering his ideas to be crazy, because I think he believes in them and thinks they're good ideas.
Yeah, he doesn't think that they're crazy, and I think he wants people to realise that, from his point of view, it is all done with rational thought. I mean, it's not unfair to say that it is all obsessional as well, and he goes to the nth degree in the way that a lot of managers don't. But again, I think he resents the idea that in some way he's trying to attract attention by what he does. I think he resents the idea that his craziness, or the craziness that people perceive in him, is attention seeking, or is done for the benefit of the cameras, or done for the benefit of the media, or more to the point, is done for the benefit of his profile and creating this caricature of somebody who is a bit off the wall and is a bit mental, to be frank. And it really isn't the case with him. I think more often than not, when he's come to blows with certain clubs, and I'd exclude Leo from this, because that seemed to go wrong very quickly, and I think there were clearly issues there. But when it's gone wrong with clubs, it's because of standards or expectations. You know, at Lazio, they weren't delivering on transfers, so he left after 2 days. At Marseille, they couldn't agree on the terms of a contract, so again, he went. And at Bilbao, there'd been arguments about the training ground, there'd been issues there. I think it's fair to say that was coming to the end of its lifespan anyway, and it did feel as if it had all gone a little bit sour. But, you know, somebody I know who knows him well had said to me, these situations don't develop because Bielsa is unduly difficult. I mean, he is difficult and he is demanding, but it's not because he's being unreasonable. It's happening because the clubs know what he expects, they know what he's going to demand, they know what he's like, and ultimately, if they don't operate in a way that he's happy with, he will up sticks and leave.
How much of this do you think comes down to personality? Because he's someone who you cannot experience for any amount of time without realising that he's not neurotypical. He clearly engages in the world in a way that's different to other people. How do you think that that's impacted the way that he's gone through management, how he's dealt with people as well?
I always imagine that it must be a challenge for him, being as kind of socially awkward as he is, in a sport where people expect footballers and managers to be very outgoing, to be very charismatic, and to give them lines, to give them stories to write about. He does that, but he does it in an almost unintentional way. So when you're getting stories from him about why he and Hernan Crespo fell out, he's not trying to fill your pages for you, and he's not trying to write headlines. He's just saying what is in his head, and he's trying to articulate other things. I mean, the example with Crespo was that he felt with Crespo that he, at one point in his career, he'd had to lie to him about how good he was in order to get a better performance out of him. And so the kind of train of thought went that if you say things to players that aren't true, ultimately it's going to catch up with you, and you're going to get found out, because somewhere down the line they'll see that you contradict yourself, and ultimately their respect for you drops. His way of management is totally unique, and his style of dealing with the press is totally unique. And you're never going to get from Bielsa any show for the camera, any display of emotion that's made for the camera. And actually, you know, I always think back to Newell's Old Boys, where they won the first title, and there are the famous pictures of him on somebody's shoulders swinging the shirt around his head and the helicopter in the background. And it was different when he won the title at Villa Sarsfield, and it will, I'm sure, be different if Leeds get promoted. I don't see him making a great play to the crowd. I think it will be on the insistence of others if he does actually come out and acknowledge the crowd in any big way. And I think he will try to fade into the background and to make as little of it as possible, and in effect to try and leave it to others, because he doesn't seem to enjoy being the centre of attention. And I think in the main, it's always been that way for him, and it's probably more and more the case as he gets older.
Which possibility do you think is more fitting for Bielsa's career? Is it the final triumph of promotion that sort of caps off a career that's been constantly seen through the lens of failure? Or is it the failure of another missed success that's dogged him throughout his footballing life?
If there's any romance in the game, you would have to think that it would be the former. And it would be that this coach who Leeds have thrown millions of pounds at and have kind of sought out in the wilds of Argentina, you know, what looked like a totally, totally unrealistic appointment when they first started talking about it, but ultimately came to pass. Him winning promotion here, I think, would be a very fitting end. And I've often wondered whether or not there's another job for him in football anywhere. Only he can say, and it might well be that he's someone who can't leave the game alone. But, you know, he is into his mid-60s now, and I wonder what else would be out there for him if he wasn't at Leeds. I don't see him ever taking charge of another English club. And, you know, there's constant interest in him from Spain and elsewhere. But it would surely have to be something that really appealed to him, and something that kind of had the same sort of passion for him as Newell's or as Leeds United. You're right. I mean, if it was to end in failure, it would extend the kind of narrative as there has been around him all the way through, and he knows that himself. But as I say, if football is romantic, and if there is any romance left in it, then it would be a bit of a travesty if he wasn't able to go out of here saying that he was the one after 15 years who finally broke this jinx.
8:30, it's the Leeds fan show. Phil Hay from The Athletic there talking to John McKenzie, who's here now. And the music at the end of that, John, makes me feel like I want to do some sort of hot yoga. Was that the idea? Or
the Football Today podcasts, they are quite highly produced and they have music in there as well. So a lot of people were saying that they felt a lot more relaxed about promotion off the back of listening to that podcast.
I can't be bothered to do the rest of the night, to be honest. Get Matt back in here. I'm not bothered now by the rest of this. Now, listen, there's a big game coming up tomorrow. Great local rivalry as well. It's Huddersfield, where, frankly, it always rains. My dad lives there and he says it doesn't, but he's a liar. The beauty of going there is you can see the Emily Moore transmitter, which I imagine as a Leeds fan you're looking forward to. It is, according to my dad, the biggest freestanding monument in Europe. I don't know whether that's true or not.
Is that true?
I don't know whether that's true. My dad says a lot of things.
That's a great word to throw in because it just makes it sound a lot more like plausible, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it?
If you say something like that, people are going to be like, well, they must have done some sort of research. That must be true.
Exactly, yeah. My dad says stuff with confidence and people tend to believe him. He also says...
I'm going to fact check your dad.
Will you fact check that? I can tell him if he's wrong. He also says all Mercedes-Benz are diesel. Now, that isn't true. That's nonsense. When he said that, I went, oh, right. What? Don't talk rubbish, Dad. And he's an Everton fan, so, you know, don't believe a word he says. Anyway, Huddersfield, the opposition, 3 o'clock tomorrow. We will get into that with Huddersfield Town journalist for the Examine Alive, Stephen Chicken, and I'll be asking him the first question in a couple of minutes' time. Is that your real name or is it a stage name?
Love Sport.
13 minutes to 9 every Friday night, the Leeds Fans Show. Matt Beadle is normally here to host it, but he couldn't be bothered tonight. He said, I can't be bothered, it's Friday night, get lost. And then he rang me, which is a weird way to ask me to come and do the show, but here I am. It's Andy Hodgson, normally here on a Sunday between 12 and 4, and I will be here this weekend building up to Chelsea, Everton and the Manchester Derby. And Ian Wright will be on the show as well. That's this Sunday between 12 and 4. But right now it is the Leeds Show with John McKenzie from All Stats, aren't we? And it's almost time for the listeners' questions, and you can get in on this if you're a Leeds fan, or even if you're not, frankly. It's 0208 70 20 558. Send us a message on that number or call us, and you can have your say or ask your questions like, are we really going to get promoted? You know, questions like that. 0208 70 20 558 is that number. John McKenzie, all stats, aren't we? It says it all. We need some opening stats for this section. Have you got any?
I've got some stats about tall buildings.
Oh,
if you
have
want
you? Yeah. Well, because of the Emily Moore transmitter we were talking about
I
before.
I found the tallest one in Europe, so you can maybe let your dad know that it's in Moscow. It's called the Ostankino Tower. 540 metres, 1,772 feet, so a good 700 feet taller than Emily Moore, so
that's a big old unit.
Yeah, it's big. It was the tallest freestanding structure in the world from 1967 to 75.
Steps or lift?
I suspect a lift. I don't know.
Yeah, you'd have to be a lift. You'd be nuts to climb up that, wouldn't you?
You're sending me down an even bigger rabbit hole here. You need to stop asking questions.
Don't go down rabbit holes. Go up them, because it's a tall freestanding structure. Anyway, so you gave me a stat at the start of the show, which was the fifth consecutive clean sheet for Leeds, which is amazing. Can they keep that going to the end of the season? Let's get into the questions, and let's hear from Daz Lee, who said the Fulham game is being hyped up as a decider. Reminds me of the Blades game last season around. This worries me. Discuss. Well, don't be worried, Daz. I mean, you know, it's not the end of the world. I went to see Fulham at the weekend against Preston. I thought they were decidedly average, really.
Yeah.
So it's not.
It's funny, a couple of the questions here have got discuss at the end of them, like we're doing GCSEs or something, aren't they? Let's discuss it. I think, yeah, obviously it's not going to come down to one game. We've still got Huddersfield and Cardiff before we play Fulham. They've got a couple of potentially tricky games as well. They've got Bristol City and I can't remember who it is. But they've got another tough game. So I think by the time it gets to that game anyway, we could even have a bigger buffer by then. But even after that, Leeds have got a much nicer run than Fulham. And there's a reason why so many models have us looking nailed on for promotion, because, unless the unthinkable happens and Leeds collapse like they did last season, then I don't foresee anything going particularly wrong. But it happened last season, so I guess that's the 2% chance of us actually only finishing in the playoff spots. So yeah, that's most models have us at about around that 2% to finish in the playoff spots. It's possible, but very unlikely. If we do, I think there's a 30% chance that Leeds will go up from there. So even if you do fall into the playoffs, you've still got a much better chance than anyone else in the playoff spots. So it's one of those things where, yeah, the worst case scenario can always happen, but you should be pretty convinced that it won't.
So stats-wise, you're saying I couldn't give a monkeys about Fulham in third place, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm saying that, yeah.
Yeah.
And these models...
Shoot your face, Fulham. That's what you're saying, isn't it?
yeah, exactly. Yeah. I want to be clear as well, like these models that these mathematicians have done up are based on, they take all the stats from the season so far, they look at who's going to produce goals, who's going to concede goals, and they run 10,000 simulations of these, and then they base the probabilities on that. So what they're saying is that in 10,000 simulations of the last 10 games of the season, Leeds finished in the top two 98% of the time. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, there's a chance it might not happen, but it's very low.
John, what you're saying is we don't need statisticians. They're idiots. Fulham, nonsense. Shut your face. Yeah, so Daz Lee, stop getting stressed. It is not a decider. Daz Lee, calm down, son. You need to play a bit more of your yoga music we had on earlier. That would calm Daz down. Let's get on to the next one. If we get promoted, what two positions do you think we need to upgrade and why? That comes from the young peacock, who I believe is not an actual peacock.
No, I don't think
but
so.
But a person.
Yeah. I think peacocks do tend to struggle to send in questions to radio shows as a general rule.
It's the feathers, that's the problem.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, what two positions do you think we need to upgrade?
It's a good question. I think most Leeds fans are going to be saying striker because I think they're not convinced by Pat Bamford.
What, are you a Bamford out?
I'm Bamford in. Personally.
You're Bamford in?
Yeah, so...
Well, that surprises me even more.
I don't know if I'm Bamford. I'm sort of Bamford... I don't even know what I am. Like, neutral? Bamford neutral? Bamford non-curious?
Oh. Right, okay. All right, okay.
I'm not sure if that... I don't know. I don't know if striker is the most pressing position we need.
It will be in the Premier League, man.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Well, we've got John Kevin Augustin as well. Let's hope that he has a good summer and he comes in looking like the elite player that he was 5 years ago. That's the way I'm going with it. Adam Forshaw, his position, we've missed him so much this season, and I think we need to have at least a backup for him. If not, I don't know what he's had knee surgery, so that's important. Other than that, yeah, okay, maybe we do need a striker. You've persuaded me.
You've come fully around the mountain.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just kind of we may lose Ben White, so we will need another centre back as well. So those I'll say three. So a central midfielder, particularly a centre back, and then some kind of replacement for Bamford.
You're right on the keepers front.
Well,
dodgy ground.
Let's not talk about that. But yeah. we are playing Meslier as though he's going to be at some point a starting keeper. We brought in a backup keeper over the break. Anticipating Kiko Casilla's ban, and I suppose they may bring in someone else in, but if Meslier has a good run, you never know, they might just keep him straight in for the next season.
At one point, of course, it was looking like Tom Heaton was going to go there and he ended up at Aston Villa, but that would have been a good one for the Premier League because he'd got that experience. But
there's always someone like that knocking around, isn't there? So I suppose if
top class England goalkeeper, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah, you mean Nick Pope, isn't it?
I think Joe Hart's available if you're interested. I don't know whether
I'd rather go without a goalkeeper. To be honest.
Okay. Barney Stewart says, and if you want to join in, you've got a couple of minutes. 0208 70 20 558. Be quick. We're very busy. Barney Stewart, not Barney Rubble. That was another fellow from the Flintstones. Says Pablo makes his 150 appearance for the club tomorrow. How much do you rate him, and would you class him a club legend?
I rate him a lot. I rate him very highly. I always have done. I think he's been one of the bright sparks in a period that hasn't had many bright sparks. I think he's a club legend. Yeah, I think he should be up there in the pantheon. It's a shame that we haven't been able to see him at his peak in the top flight of English football. But hopefully next season we'll get to see him having a homecoming to the Premier League.
A club legend like Chapman, like Robbie Blake, like, I mean, the list goes on, mate, doesn't it? The list goes on. Here's another one. Brolin ate the pie. Is that Thomas? Is it?
I think so. Yeah.
He goes by that name now. That's
maybe it's his. What do you call it? It's handle on Twitter.
Exactly, yeah. Anyway, he says, does the role Bamford plays reduce his opportunity to score? By that, I mean, is the requirement degrading his ability? Is he compromised mentally, perhaps?
Disgust.
What is that? Is he compromised?
There's a lot in there, isn't there?
Yeah.
I think the question is saying, is the role that Bamford is playing actually pushing him to do things that aren't scoring?
Yeah.
And so as a result of that, he's not getting as many chances. No, because he's getting plenty of chances and missing them. I think he probably is compromised mentally, or whatever the wording was. But I think that's because, I don't know, it's difficult because there's a sense in which Bielsa playing players, even when they are underperforming like Bamford is quite, I think, freeing for players, because they don't feel as though they are being based on the quality of their performances as much. But at the same time, I think with Bamford, it's got to a funny thing now where it's just a monkey on his back now, and it's almost impossible for him to shake. But fortunately, we've been having other players scoring, and so we've been okay. But I'm sure the same old criticisms will come out if Leeds fail to score the weekend and Bamford misses another sitter. So.
Well, I wish we could answer this final question, which is basically compare the keepers, unsure man number four. No, because we haven't got time. But I'm sure you can do that on Twitter afterwards. The big question for me is, it's Huddersfield tomorrow. What's the plan? What's the score? You got 30 seconds. What do you reckon?
I'm not sure. Like, as I said to Stephen, Huddersfield was a game that we really struggled against. We did end up winning 2-0 last time, but I think we were very unconvincing in that. I actually think it's going to be interesting to see if the Cowleys do what I said and come out and play a bit more expansively, because that could change things. But I expect the Leeds will win, and I think it will be 1-0.
1-0 to Leeds?
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah.
That is the Leeds Show. It's back again next Friday. There was John McKenzie from All Stats, Aren't We? And thank you to our other guests during the hour as well. Thank you for your questions too. Leeds, 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 they're going up. Don't you worry, my friend. What about Cardiff City? It's their fan show next, then Brighton at 9:30 on Love Sport.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.